going to talk about Samanta Bhadra, which is in Japanese, fugen is the word. And the three characteristics of compassion, which is Avalokiteshvara, love, loving kindness, Samanta Bhadra, and wisdom, Manjusri, are kind of central in Zen practice. And just like in China, there's a mountain for Manjusri and for Samanta Bhadra that are special for them. And to kind of cult, and the active love, which is of Samanta Bhadra, represents really the willingness to do the actions that will bring good. Because in a way, not just being, you know, that actually to do good, you have to do things. And his vows are actually very famous. And the Bodhi, as example of the Bodhisattva vows. And it's really, in Buddhism, it's actually really important how, where you're pointing your training to. Because a lot in life is what you're trying to do. Because it's very hard to accomplish something if you're not trying to do it. And to actually have the goal in mind of the Bodhisattva path is very kind of, is, you know, very helpful in actually pointing us to the place we need to go. And it's very common in training that we start out just wanting stuff from the practice. I mean, this is almost everyone's gateway in, is I want more peace, I want to feel better, I want to be more, you know, more comfort. And that's kind of normal. You're putting a lot of, you know, you're doing something that's difficult, you're putting effort in, and you want to get a benefit. In fact, if people ever get any benefit from their practice, I'm sure they wouldn't practice. So it's not illogical. But on the other hand, if you practice just looking in terms of the benefits, usually it won't keep going because it's not, you know, you don't always see the benefit of the practice immediately. It'd be like seeing the benefit of physical therapy when you first start doing it. You know, often it actually just hurts, you know, and you have to trust your therapist that it'll actually help in the long run, you know, or that chemo actually is going to help rather than just make you sick as a dog. You know, and a lot of training is not in a way, and the vows to actually to look deeper, and the Bodhisattva vows are ways to look beyond self. However innumerable beings are, I vow to save them all. However inexhaustible passions may be, I vow to cleanse them all. However unfathomably deep the Dharma may be, I vow to comprehend it completely. I vow to attain the way for myself and for all beings. And it's a way of actually freeing ourselves from looking at things just in terms of ourself. Because actually, if you want to free yourself from suffering, you have to free yourself from the burden of self. Because as long as you're trapped, as long as all you're identifying with is this body and this mind and this consciousness, you're in trouble. It's not going to work. You know, you won't be free of worry, fear, despair, because frequently the conditions are not going to be what you want them to be. You know, it's just like one of training is that you want to feel good without anything being kind of inconvenient, anything getting in the way. You know, and you can almost look, and people will initially almost look at training that they're trying to get rid of all obstacles that prevent them from being still, present, kind, all the rest, without realizing that actually, no matter what you do, you're going to be hitting obstacles. You're going to have difficulty. There's no way around it. And to understand practice is not that you're avoiding things, but you're doing what training's really about, which is converting the passions. You know, the main line of training is you're converting your desires, your greeds, your ill will, anger, hate, your delusions, your ignorance, and you're converting them into compassion. You're converting them into loving kindness. You're converting them into wisdom. And you do that by actually being willing to actually see and help what's there. We think of training as I'm achieving something in training by getting more peaceful or feeling better. You know, it's often what we want. I want to be enlightened so I feel good. And, we want peace. We want serenity. We want things to be the way we want them to be. And the real point of training is actually that's not going to work. It's not going to come. You're never going to get that. What you're going to get is the fact that you can actually be with things that are difficult, and you're still going to find them some difficulty. You're going to be things that are hard, and don't expect them to be easy. You're going to have difficult feelings, and that's a normal part of practice. But you're pointing on actually, instead of how do I, feel wonderful, more you realize there's something very good and right in letting go about how we're doing, how we're feeling, and how can I do what's good in the deepest sense? How can I help everybody, that we come across? How can I actually be a vehicle, of creating harmony with everything? How do I bring peace, not to Kinray, but peace wherever it is? Because it's not much help. Really, if you have an open heart, it's not going to help you if you feel wonderful, but you're not going to feel wonderful if the person next to you is utterly miserable. All you have to do is, most of us can think of being in relationships. How happy are you going to be if somebody you're living with and you love is falling to pieces? Oh, it's such a wonderful day. Yeah, they're suicidal, but my day is great. it can't work. You're going to be suffering. And training in a way is getting the viewpoint that we're just doing what's good and realizing a lot of how we feel or what's going on with us isn't that big a deal. And this is liberating. Liberation isn't when somebody tells me how good they feel, because I think, okay, what happens when they don't feel good? It's going to come. Somebody, I love meditating. I think that's great. But what's going to happen when you don't love meditating? When meditation is hard. I love coming to the Priory. I think, okay, that's... I find that personally nice. But it won't stay that way. Nothing does. That's how come relationships often don't last, because we think, oh, this person, I just love being with them. And have you ever been with somebody you always love being with them? I've rarely run across that relationship, It's hard to always, one of the reasons it's hard is I don't always like being with me. Face it, And I can't get away. It's like I'm trapped with me. And it kind of can mess up everything, because no matter how nice they are, I'm still me. And that's fine. It's when we become less interested, less caught up in just how we're doing, how we're feeling, what's going, and make our training deeper, which the Bodhisattva vows really help us do, by realizing it's not about me. And actually, you're not going to free yourself from suffering unless you're willing to actually do that right intention, which is to help others and open your heart to them. And by Bodhisattva vows can be mistaken by saying, I'm going to save all sentient beings. No, it's that I'm willing to save all sentient beings. The self is actually not that real. Yourself, in a way, is no more real than Samatha Bhadra is real. It's just coming together of conditions, and poof, it's going to be falling apart of conditions, just like water suddenly becomes vapor. The body will transform. And, we think it's this real solid, God, I am so real. Well, you know, thus shall you think of this fleeting world, a bubble in a stream, a child's laugh, a phantasm, a dream, which is from the Diamond Sutra. It's not that real. But you're in touch with something, a deeper reality, when you look at things with the eyes of Samantabhadra and you're trying to help. And then a difficult relationship, rather than being an obstacle, becomes a vehicle. Okay, this is hard. And people will sometimes feel like something is wrong when something is hard. It's like, that's the nature of things. You know, and if you can help something hard, just like sometimes, you know, people, I'll talk to people who've had really difficult relationships in their family, you know, with their somebody, and over years they work it through, and there's something incredibly rewarding about kind of finally to be, in a way, see the Buddha in this mother that they hated, you know, who isn't really an exceptional being except they were their mother. If they were somebody else, they wouldn't just an a difficult person, which the world is usually full of. But they're my mother, you know. And and that's why, in a way, we're not looking, you know, just like, I like this, I dislike that. You know, rather you're seeing what's flowing out of whatever I do. Where's the good coming from? So if you help somebody, it doesn't matter if you like them or you know, it's not being done on like and dislike. And in a way, practice is a continuum where we're moving from that first point of view where it's about me to the second point of view where you're letting the self drop away. You know, as the quote of Dogen, Buddhism, to study Buddhism is to study the self, the first point of view, which is what we start with. We have to look and be aware of the self. To study the self is to forget the self. When you really start paying attention, you almost can't find which is you. Just feeling, just thought, just stuff. And you can actually let go and just see it as stuff. And then there's not really a you there. It's just karma. It's like, oh, that's anger. It's not really my anger. It's just anger. And just like the person you're helping, you're not helping, I am helping, let's say, Robert with his problem. You're helping a defilement find the truth. You know, you're helping anger find peace. You know, like in the Hasidic tradition, there's a nice thing where they go, the whole point of religious life is to raise the sparks that you find buried. The sparks of the divine are trapped everywhere. They're trapped in people's hearts. They're trapped in objects. They're trapped wherever you look. And through nothing special, but treating them with wholeness, with kindness, with reverence, you free the sparks wherever you find them. And you bring everything, all the diversity back to one. You know, and that's what we're trying to do in our spiritual life. Bring it back to one. And we're on that continuum where we have to see, you know, I'm trapped in just being obsessing about me. You know, how am I feeling? You know, well, actually, is it really important how you feel? You know, nobody else finds it that important. It's like, why is it so important to you? You know, it's like it's just feeling. You know, just accept that it's, just try to understand where the feelings come from, see them arise and pass, and realize that you're just here to help. You know, kind of, just like, you know, the image in Buddha, you know, Mahayana is the great vehicle, because the path in, which is kind of rude, but the path they describe the other tradition in Buddhism, which is now the only part of it left, is called Theravada. There used to be dozens, but now the only one that exists is the one that's called Theravada, which is the way of the elders, is called the Arhant path, where you're training focusing on the self. Actually, in Theravada, they have the Bodhisattva path. It's just not emphasized, you know. Well, in Mahayana, you're bad if you're not being a Bodhisattva. In the end, to train, though, it's the same thing. You can't be one or the... In the end, Dogen actually wrote that the distinction really falls away because in the end, you can't... The truth is the truth. There isn't a self, really. You can't get to the other shore unless you want. You can't keep anyone out. You have to help everyone there because it's the only thing you can do. You're trapped on the boat with them already. You know, it's not like you have a choice. You're interacting, you're with them. And whether you, unless you want to refuse to do it, you have to help what you can help, do what you can do. Or you're actually kind of closing your heart to what's there and then trapping yourself in you, which actually is great suffering. You know, it's like the comment of the Dalai Lama. He said, the most selfish thing you can do is be selfless. Because if you're selfless, you'll be helping the self more than anything else you can do. Well, if you're selfish, you'll actually suffer. So, and, you know, and if you practice, to some extent it'll help the self. You'll get some rewards. You'll feel calmer, more peaceful things. Usually you'll function a bit better. All those things usually happen with practice. So there's good reasons for selfish reasons to practice. But unless you take it deeper, you'll still always be bound. And you have to kind of see, you know, that giving up your convenience, for instance, to help someone who doesn't even like you, doesn't even treat you well, it's actually liberating because in a way you're freeing yourself from the fact that it doesn't matter what they are, you're still having compassion for them rather than thinking, God, I don't like a world with this selfish person in it. Why are people like that? Instead you help them and you just have sympathy for the fact that actually, you know, this will work. And it takes, and our self-centeredness actually has deep roots. From a Buddhist point of view, you've been self-centered for a long time. Like, you know, when you were that self-centered slug, you know, many, many, you know, 10,000 lifetimes ago. And, you know, and it takes hard practice to loosen this, and it's very important to try to loosen this. It's not that you have to, you know, it's seeing how actually our selfishness hurts us and others. You know, it's like, you know, and then we're really trapped in a world. It's funny, when people are selfish, it's amazing how much they find everybody else around them infuriating and selfish. You know, it's like, it's funny when you have a fault, I can't even remember, it's so amazing how when people have a fault, they find that fault so difficult in others. You know, I've been in lots of situations where people will complain about somebody, and I think, you're actually worse at it than they are. You know, if you really, of course the other one's in charge, but you know, they'll be in charge, and I think, God, they're more difficult than the person they were complaining about. And it's even seen without the Bodhisattva vows point us in a right direction of the fact that I have to embrace everything. That's the only way I'm going to actually free myself, and actually freeing others from suffering feels good. Just like actually people often don't realize, but it feels much better to love somebody than to be loved. Which is often the reverse of what people think that they want. I want somebody to love me. Well, actually, it actually feels better to love someone else. Now, it doesn't feel so great if they hate you. Or don't like you. Those things where you're one demanding something back. But actually, you can love without, you know, it's almost like, I'll think of it as, I have trouble doing it with people, but actually I've been able to do it with cats and dogs, where I've had cats and dogs who actually didn't seem to pay me any attention. You know, cats, it's very common. You know, you can have a cat who are you? You know, why aren't you giving me my food when I want it? You know, it's like, you're this servant for the cat. And they, most of the time, ignore you completely. And actually, when I'm around the cat, I'll still love the cat. You know what I mean? If I'm around it long enough, I'll probably still start caring about the cat because it's still, you know, there's still a sweet being. You know, there's still this being there. And it's a lot easier to do with cats. I find it harder to do with people, but I'm working. I'm working. I figure if I can do it with a cat, I can do it with everybody. But, you know, it's kind of not having demands of what you're really asking from people. Not so lost in our needs, our wants, that we can't actually see others. Which is often what happens. Think of when you're angry, when you're despairing, whatever it is, you know, you won't even see, you know. It's like one of the sad things when people are suicidal is they'll kind of, oh, a classic one I've heard a lot of times over the years is everybody would be happier if I was gone. And it's like so utterly wrong. I mean, they not only would not people be happier, they would be so devastated they may never, in some cases, ever fully get over it. You know, like parents losing their, you know, in some cases it was like I actually spoke to the parents of somebody who was suicidal, and they're saying, oh, I'm just a burden to them. They'd be better off if I was gone, and their parents would be, you know, it would be like an open wound, probably often for the rest of their life, you know, when a child commits suicide. It doesn't have to be, but it's hard to, that's a hard one to let go of and cleanse. And often we don't really, most of our intents, usually most people don't have an intention to hurt others or to be, you know, to kind of be damaging to them. But often you're lost in a fog of me. You know, you're trapped in this self-absorbed fog in which you don't even fully see much else. And all you have to do is think when you're really suffering how thick that fog gets. You know, be really depressed, really despairing. It's like nothing kind of can cut through at times. You know, it's like, you know, talking to somebody, I feel like, you know, it's like nothing's getting through. You know, it's and real practice, in a way, one of the aspects of real spiritual practice is actually converting that struggle between what we want and what the self really is asking for, and looking deeper and see what's good on a deeper level, what's really needed here. You know, when you're interacting with others, when you're doing things, and to take refuge in and trusting the deeper truth that, in a way, we need nothing, and trying to trust that, which is a battle, because you can, all you have to do is think, part of you says, hell no, you know, I want, I need, you know, I like all acceptance, but let me put all these qualifications on, you know, what I'm willing to kind of accept. It's like, I'm willing for people to be a little rude, but not too bad. I'm willing to things to go one way. And part of training is the world often doesn't see an alternative to being selfish and self-centered. I mean, it's not something our... All you have to do is think of, you know, what in the media is telling you to let go. What in the media is saying you shouldn't be self-absorbed. What in the media is telling you that actually, you can actually help all sentient beings. And you do that by just training, by just letting go of the self. And that allows you to be a vehicle that helps others. You know, one way of seeing enlightenment is it's just letting go of your self-obsession. You know, you're no longer the center of anything. You're really very, very insignificant. How your feelings very insignificant. What happens to you is very insignificant. You know, now that's not a deep truth to anyone else, but it is to you. You know, and, you know, and it's important to kind of see it that way. Anyway, any comments as I'm talking on here? Part of this comes from seeing better. The nice thing from a Buddhist point of view is if you see things clearly, everything starts dissolving from the meanings we give it, which usually comes from our self-centered point of view. You know, it starts dissolving like, just like it's very hard not to have compassion for others when we desperately want what they have. You know, with the mind of envy or the mind of, you know, as like somewhere in Buddhism, I remember reading, you know, to really take the bodhisattva vows, you have to actually see through the lures of samsara. You know, if you have your heart on set on something, it's very hard to see that it's not a big deal. You know, it'd be like somebody, you know, kind of, you know, while with training you can, you know, it's like I remember somebody totaling his brand new car, and he said, at least I have my Buddhist practice, it's just a car. And I thought, that's handy to, you know, to kind of keep that in mind. And that it's just a car. And when we don't see samsara for what it is, you know, this world of change and suffering, we can't really have compassion and desire to help them because we're going to be envious and jealous. And think of how much suffering there is in being envious and jealous. Does anybody enjoy it? I mean, you know, wow, that was really good envy. It felt so good to, you know, I mean, it's a form of suffering if you think about it. Nobody, you know, wants it. But they don't see better what actually is going on. And often they don't even, you know, it's not infrequent that somebody, if they even can see better, would see that the person they're envious of is sometimes miserable. You know, what I've loved is when people, you know, like would be envious of somebody in a relationship and they finally get to know the people and they realize they're miserable. You know, there they were thinking, oh, if I only had a relationship like that, I would be so happy. And then they get to know the people and realize, you know, they're not happy. You know, it's not that easy. You know, and if you have the desire to help others, like in the vows of Samant, that's what we were saying, the practice, there's deep merit in that, because a lot of what life is, it's what our intention is doing with whatever's going on. And if we're not if we're intending to help, even if we don't help them, the intention is liberating. The intention actually helps. Well, the intention to actually, I want what they have, actually isn't very liberating. And then if we get it, we actually often don't even feel good. You know, it's, there's something very unsatisfying about a jealous and envious heart. Because when you really look at things from a selfish point of view, even when we get something, it often feels hollow. It's like almost like there's an automatic, so what? Well, there's something very satisfying, actually, if you really think about Buddhist practice. One of the things that makes it work is there's a wholeness to it. You know? Just like I rarely meet, if I ask most people who've practiced Buddhism, okay, when you look back at your life, what do you regret doing? I'll rarely speak to somebody who said, I meditated too much. You know? I gave too much. I was definitely too compassionate there. You know, all those things. You know, nobody ever regrets. You know, it feels good. You look back at it and you say, oh, that was a good thing. You know, even if it wasn't the best practice. You know, sometimes you did a practice that proved not to be your practice, but you don't regret it. It just, you know, it wasn't the best. You know, you find something better. It's not like it has, you know, you still got something out of it. And actually, it took you to where you next went, if you follow what I mean. It's not bad that you, let's say, did something that... And actually, the wish, the bodhisattva vows give deep meaning to whatever you encounter. You know, because in a way it's part of the, this is what you're doing. If you have a difficult emotion, well, this is the bodhisattva vow. How do I help you? You know, and there's a line I always like of the sixth patriarch who had a line. He said, you have to remember the innumerable beings that you're rescuing are all in your own heart. You know, all your greeds, your passions, everything you have are just like lost beings, like lost sparks. And in a way, the help you're doing, there's no difference between helping your delusions and helping somebody else's delusions. You know, it's all just helping. You know, just like, you know, if you're helping somebody else or you're helping yourself, it's just helping. You know, it isn't like the distinction is that important, you know, important. Like, well, you know, and I try not to get into the kind of form they do in Chinese Buddhism, where they try to give a numeric value to which help gets what value. You know, kind of, you know, not usually the deepest form of Buddhism from my point of view. You know, that's why.
Reverend Kinley, do you feel sometimes that people get, it's annoying to them when you do nice things to them because they feel bad about it?
Well, I can. Yes,
there is something that, I mean, sometimes it can be, it's not very nice and not very, you
well,
know,
sometimes it matters. First of all, it matters what you're doing. Sometimes people, you know, there's a skill in helping, so you're actually helping. I mean, there's, you know, a message you used to like say, you know, don't be a boo-boo bodhisattva in the sense of trying to help people in a way that's just driving them crazy, which you can do. You know, people can be insensitive and kind of, you know, not help, but kind of impose what they feel on you. But on the other hand, sometimes it can be very hard for people to accept help. It makes them feel inadequate. It makes them feel, a good example is I remember when somebody in the Sangha here really needed help. And I'm trying to get her help because she was in bad shape and needed help. And she said, no, I'm somebody who helps others. I'm not somebody who is helped. And I kind of thought, Do you really think there's two kinds of people? You know, it's because it's almost putting her in a position of being better than the people she's helping. And it's actually a skill to accept help, you know, because it makes us feel, in a way, there's a vulnerability in being helped that can be very hard on people. You have to have compassion for the fact that it can be very, I mean, people will, I'll hear tales of people going to amazing lengths not to get help. You know, they want to be independent, they want to be strong, independent. It's like, I remember hearing this, somebody was telling this really sad story where somebody was living in this house where that was two stories and he couldn't even walk the stairs anymore. He was just literally dragging himself, you know, up and down the stairs, but he wouldn't get any help. You know, he just refused to get help, and he was like going through great agony to do it because he just wasn't willing to be helped. So there's a, and again, that's the self getting in the way. Like, wow, you know, and thinking there's something, you know, of both trying to be in control and trying to think I don't need help. Well, from a Buddhist point of view, it's good to actually recognize that we all need help. You know, so the Bodhisattva vows aren't just how do I help others and rescue them, but also to allow them to help us. We're not any different. We're at times we're the ones who can help, and if we can, it's important to be willing. But at times we have to realize our karma needs help, whether it's illness or the fact that we're just having a hard time with something. It's one of the reasons we take refuge in the Sangha, is the fact that at times everybody needs help. And to be vulnerable enough to kind of, and to not feel you're special or there's something wrong with having a problem or having difficulty or just being ill, you know, kind of like, oh, I could use somebody to buy me grocery, you know, I don't have any food, and I'm not willing to get help. And, you know, people will be like that. They'll have trouble just asking somebody, can you give me a hand? And again, that's being trapped in the self. And a lot of Buddhist training is, you know, the saying about to study Buddhism, to study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be enlightened by everything. You know, so, you know, kind of not make the self for reality to come in. It's all normal stuff, whatever's happening. You know, even if you're dying, normal stuff. You know, you have cancer, well, normal stuff. Somebody, you know, just like, you know, Catherine just lost her husband. But that's normal, you know, normal stuff. I mean, that's life. You know, people die, and, you know, we can't even picture a reality in which they don't. You know, it's just we want the normal stuff on our terms, like they should live longer. You know, they shouldn't have problems. They shouldn't change. No. And a part of the Bodhisattva vows and usually the gateway of training is the wish of compassion for yourself. You know, what do I need to give myself that will free me from the bonds that have been woven that entangle me in suffering? You know, and you have to realize that's real. What do I have to give myself? You know, it's nice to say, God, I'm going to help free everybody else, but I can't stop complaining about this or wanting to throttle that person. Or just not wanting to put up with whatever it is I don't want to put up with. You know, and probably everybody could make a checklist of all that you don't want to put up with and realize that's the Bodhisattva vows, that this is the path, this is the gateway, all the things you don't want to put up with. Not that it's that you have to find things that are difficult to put up with. it'll naturally be given to you. Life gives us plenty of things to train with. I've never met the person who isn't presented with plenty of things that they don't want to put up with. Often they don't even realize that it's training to put up with it. You know, they'll just get frustrated and annoyed, like, how could this be? Without realizing this is the gateway. You know, this difficult person is your bodhisattva. It's like, I always like a great story, Gurdjieff, who was famous kind of religious teacher, and his community had one person who was incredibly difficult in it. And people just couldn't figure out why Gurdjieff let him be there. And everyone was just finding this guy so hard to put up with. And then after Gurdjieff died, somebody looked at the records and found everybody else was paying to be in the community. Gurdjieff was paying the fellow to be there. he thought it was good to have this difficult person that everyone had to learn to deal with. You know, that there was a teaching in, you know, having this rough...
I want a raise.
You didn't realize what a deep purpose you've been fulfilling. You know, all those people I've been a trial for. They should look at me as a bodhisattva.
Next time we irritate someone, we said, "Aren't you lucky?"
But that's an actually important aspect of things, is how we view it. It's just normal stuff that there's difficult things. It's amazing how much we think something is wrong when things are difficult, or something is wrong when we feel bad, or something is wrong when all the difficult karma comes up. Well, this is the nature of things. You know, wow, I hate this. Well, if you want to like some stuff deeply, you have to accept that you're going to hate some stuff deeply. You can't have one without the other. You know, it's deluded to think that you can only have things, you know, oh, I think this is such a wonderful person. You know, and of course, you know, if you spend enough time with them, they stop being so wonderful. You know, and then you realize, well, I have to still put up with this aspect of them or that aspect of them. And it's like our Master Jiya, when we were in the monastery, she said, a monastery is sort of like a rock tumbler, where the rocks tumble around, and as they tumble, the rough edges keep getting ground away as they keep bouncing off each other. And just by dealing with everyone, the rough edges, which we're all putting up with, have a tendency, and they do. You know, they start getting a little softer. You learn, God, I should stop driving people crazy in this way. You know, the sharp edges do have a tendency to go away with training. You know, just the bodhisattva vows are based on maintaining a mindfulness on the facts of life and permanence. You know, the unsatisfactory nature of things, the emptiness, the teaching of no self. You know, and that points you to free you from concentrating so hard on your suffering, your emotional problems, how you're feeling. And have sympathy, but not get caught up in everyone else's either. You try to help them, but you realize it's just, this is the way things are. The fact that somebody's having a hard time is normal. You know, it's not like something's going wrong that somebody's having difficulty. You know, when, if they're really looking deeply, life and death are, it's very hard to free yourself from our self-absorption and our difficulties. It's not a little thing. It's a great accomplishment. But we help both ourselves and others by looking deeper and seeing deeper so that both we're not getting caught up in our difficulties and we're not getting caught up in their difficulties. And that actually allows other people to see with better eyes, because they can start seeing, you know, with our eyes, you know. And that's one of the reasons when you're around people who are deeply deluded, one of the problems is you start seeing reality through their eyes. God, this person is awful. You know, sometimes I'm around a group of people where they're all complaining about something, they're all seeing everything. Or, God, this is so wonderful. And you kind of go, no, it's not. You know, but, you know, you start seeing reality through their eyes. And one of the advantages of training with the Sangha is you start seeing reality a bit through the eyes. That see beyond both self and others. Yeah, anyway, anybody? Yeah?
Master, when you're around someone that's complaining, how do you best empathize with their distress without colluding with their perspective?
Well, I mean, the perspective is you have to kind of see it more as nothing fundamentally wrong or nothing horrific or whatever their judgments of it, but have sympathy for their pain. You know, the two are not the same. It's like, all you have to do is think of a child. Children are getting upset and you know, about all sorts of things, and you know that it's not real. But you don't feel like, oh, you know, this 5-year-old shouldn't be. You know, they should grow up and be more mature. You know, it's a 5-year-old. So, in a way, it's no different with a person. You can see it. They shouldn't be nice if they weren't this deluded. But on the other hand, you know, that's the way they are and have sympathy for it. You know, just like you would for a child or a cat. Yeah.
In that situation, I always, when I have any presence of mind and I'm complaining about them, the person complaining, I just remember that I try to remember I have some crazy places like that that I don't even see. And that always kind of brings me back and allows me to just keep my mouth shut, basically, in the face of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, people, we all have things we... I mean, everybody complains at times. You know, I've never met or heard of somebody who has no... There's accounts of the Buddha complaining.
Right.
You know, it's like saying, I'm tired of people. They don't listen to me. I tell them this and they do that. You know, through the scriptures, you know, like, people just don't listen to him. You know, which is normal kind of infuriating karma that you keep saying something and nobody paying it. You know, people... don't do it. And you would think, but it's the Buddha. But of course, at the time, the Buddha was just a religious teacher. He wasn't the, you know, it's like plenty of people went to study him and kind of thought, oh, he doesn't know anything and left. You know what I mean? Because he was just another teacher in the era. It wasn't like he was the Buddha, you know, like we now view him. Yeah?
My heart's beating as I'm thinking about asking this question. So right now I'm going through a transition, going to move to a new place, but the house owner lady that I live with, I feel like she's doing a lot of psychic attack to me. And how do I protect myself?
Mostly realize that there's nothing she can really do that'll hurt you. You know, I mean, there's no... things, and I can talk to you afterwards. There's some specific things you can do, but you know I don't need to talk about the class. You know what I mean? You know, start finding out a little more and can tell you. But on the other hand, there's really nothing. It's just, you know, like a lot of things, it's possible she can make you a bit uncomfortable, but just that's normal. You know, you can't help things. You know, there's no real fundamental damage they can do to you.
Can I ask, thinking about difficult situations or difficult people, or, you know, what you said about seniors as teaching, you know, he was paying them to be their teachers in a way. And I think a lot of times difficult situations and people also can actually make you realize you need to change something, mm-hmm. and you don't need to let it anyone harm you or do something just because you need to accept everything. You know?
Yeah. And usually the things we find most difficult are things that frequently that we share that fault to some extent. You know, it's like it's... If you're opinionated, you find other people's opinions very hard to take. You know, if you're angry, actually, you'll have less tolerance for other people's anger. You know, you don't have an angry person who meets another angry person and say, oh, that's nice.
How long the more you practice, you start, and the less you take it personally, you start to see what's the best thing to do in your life.
Yeah. And you have to remember, whatever the nice thing about training is that when you don't take things personally and you sit still with it, it's just conditions that are passing through you. You know, you don't retain any of it fundamentally. It's just feelings, thoughts, things, you know. You know, nothing can really hurt you. It's just conditions passing through you. You know, there's nothing that can be hurt, nothing that can be damaged, which is very liberating. It's just, it's like, what does somebody else's thoughts or feelings mean? Even your body. You know, if you don't retain conditions, it's just, oh, my toe hurts, or my tooth hurts, or my head hurts. You know, it's nothing, it's not really you, it's just, you know, just what you're traveling around with, and you don't have to take any more possession of it than your car. You know, it's like, oh, my car squeaking. My knee squeaking. It's really the same thing. Except we take one more personally. Anyway, it's probably about